Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Morning, everybody. I'd like to start off by thanking everybody for attending another virtual presentation. It doesn't seem long ago since we did this for the first time in May, but it's quickly becoming the new norm. Of course, we'd rather be presenting to you face-to-face, and we hope to be doing that again, perhaps with our full-year results in 21. I'd like to talk about some very strong key highlights here. In what's been an incredibly busy start to the year for Sumo, we've had fantastic performances in many areas of the business in what can only be described as extraordinary circumstances. We're also very keen with the current situation to look at how we can take more advantage of the accelerating growth in the number of players and general video game engagement, generally by ensuring our own self-publishing ambition is delivered more effectively. And to that point, we have announced the recent appointment of a head of publishing who's due to start in November. All in all, very positive outlook for us, which I'll go into more detail about in the coming slides. But we're very confident around the outturn for 20 and very importantly, 21. Things are shaping up very well against a very buoyant backdrop within the market, with lots of opportunities for new clients, new projects, and further acquisitions. And talking of acquisitions, I'd like to move on to the Pipeworks acquisition, which we announced this morning. We've acquired a great business to further our growth, more specifically in North America. Does have the advantage of being based there when we can't travel, which gives us more readily available access to the market. And I couldn't be more pleased to have the team alongside us as we embark on the next phase of our journey. So a little detail about Pipeworks. The studio's been going for over 20 years. It's very well known to me. We were formerly under the same ownership for a period of time. I've known Lindsay and his senior team for quite a while. I followed this business pretty closely over the last few years. They are very similar to Sumo in terms of the activities that they provide. They do focus on live operations, and they have some of their own back-end technology to support that. They have their own IP in a game called Prominence Poker, which, just to be clear, is not a real gambling game. It's a simulation gambling game. You can't cash out. It's not real gambling. And they've got a very large and experienced team in video game and technology development, again, led by a very capable CTO that's been there since day one. They bring some great client additions to the group with EA, Wizards of the Coast, Genvid and others. And very important to us, they've got a very similar culture that aligns very well with Sumo Group. We're about our people, our clients and our investors. And we support this by making great games and having fun while we do it. And Pipeworks have a very similar culture to us at Sumo. I'd just like to hand you over to the next slide for David. Talk a little bit about the financial information of the deal.
Morning, everyone. Slightly confused what time of day it is, but I believe it is the morning. So what I'd like to do is just take a couple of slides to talk about the financial information on Pipeworks and also the deal structure, which are obviously connected. So on this slide, number six, there's a fairly sparse amount of historical financial information. What you see from this, and it's the information extracted from the audited accounts to December 19, and then the last 12 months rolling period to June 20 from the management accounts, significant growth in revenue and profit in that period. This is a fast-growing business. The financial information here reflects the business as we bought it. So we've separated out a business called Metatech, which is being demerged from Pipeworks and is the procurement body through which they access the US public sector. There are some adjustments to this. As usual, when you buy from private equity ownership, there's a bunch of things that you add back to profit, probably not quite as much as the sellers would like us to have added back. but the usual thing. We've also adjusted the numbers for Prominence Poker, that the game that Carl was talking about. You'll all be asking me about what does the future look like, and clearly I have some limitations in what I can say about that. If I look at the deal structure over the page, we are paying slightly under $100 million at maximum for this. As we've always said, that any larger deal we do was likely to have a mixture of cash and equity, and also have an element of upfront and an element of contingent deferred consideration. I think it's fair to say this deal structure has every known variation and complication that you can contemplate. So we're paying $59.5 million upfront at completion, which is expected to be between now and the end of October. There are a number of conditions to that, one of which is separating out Metatech. The other is the issue and allotment and issue of the shares. So expecting to complete in the next few weeks, and no particular threats to that completion. Paying $35 million in cash and $24.5 million in shares. Most of the cash we pay over is being used to settle third-party debt and transaction costs in the target. Our cash position, which was obviously at $30 million or so yesterday, when we pay this money out, will go down to roughly net zero. We have increased our RCF, which was previously undrawn at $13 million and is now undrawn at $30 million, that's at 3-0. Two-stage earnout based on FY20 and FY21, totaling $40 million, payable again in a mixture of cash and shares. Overall, we have the option to pay between 30 and 70% of the total purchase price in cash. The earnout, the shares are a mixture of current share price and share price in the future. Quite a sort of complicated structure. The shares are subject to lockup, and details are set out in the RNS. You'll all be asking me what the multiple of EBITDA is that we're paying. In broad terms, it's around 10. So the upfront consideration is broadly around 10 times 2020 EBITDA, and the maximum consideration based on FY21 would be around 10 times. There are some subtle variations between our view of EBITDA and the seller's view of EBITDA. We are putting a modest level of back office cost into the business because we want to run it on a PLC basis with IT and finance support in particular, which is somewhat more than private equity would tend to go for. We expect the acquisition to be significantly earnings enhancing in FY21, the first full year of ownership. We expect it to generate around $800,000 of contribution to EBITDA in the 2 months or so for the rest of this year. With that, I will pass you back to Carl.
Thanks, David. So just moving forward to the rationale for the deal. First of all, we're adding key new client relationships, which is a great position to be in. Very importantly, the client relationships which Pikeworks have developed, there is no significant overlap with the rest of the organisation, which means it's very complementary. This deal obviously gives us local access to North America, which is very important to us. Pikeworks has great game and technology IP, particularly in their back-end live ops technology, Cosimo. There's some great synergy opportunities with the studio we have in India that Pikeworks can look to utilize. Very importantly, they're a fantastic group of talented people. And as we've always said, you know, our growth ambitions are in many ways constrained by our access to talent. And these guys have an abundance of talent. And finally, we're very closely aligned culturally. You know, we have the same ambitions, we share the same philosophies in how we manage our businesses and how we nurture talent. So I'm extremely pleased that we've managed to get this deal done, and I think it's a brilliant addition to the Sumo Group of studios. So moving back to Sumo Group, great games launched or announced. So we've had an extremely busy period at Sumo with regard both game announcements and game launches. Notable mentions for game announcements are Hood, which is our own conceived IP title, a full turnkey development project being developed out of our Sumo Newcastle studio. It's being published by Focus Home Interactive. We've received very positive feedback since announcing the game with a launch trailer. And in fact, that launch trailer has now received almost 3.5 million views on YouTube since being announced. So it's getting a huge amount of attention. And Sackboy, A Big Adventure, a title being developed for Sony themselves. It's a PlayStation 5 launch title, which will also be available on PlayStation 4. Again, a full turnkey development project where the game has been designed ground up and developed by our team in Sumo Sheffield. So it's great to finally have some news flow about some of the great work that our studios have been performing. And then, very importantly, game releases and notable releases, as we've talked about before, Spider and Little Orpheus for Apple Arcade, our own IP titles released to great critical acclaim, and more recently, Hotshot Racing, a game that we've developed in conjunction with Curve Digital, the publisher, and that's been released again to great critical acclaim earlier this month. So all this against a backdrop of increased number of projects and client relationships. When we spoke in May, we actually had 21 projects in development and 12 different clients. We can now see we've got 34 projects and 20 clients. We've been extremely busy, not in just game development, but also in business development and bringing things forward as a whole within our business. So moving on to our long-term contracted revenue visibility slide. We felt we had to reintroduce this. We were concerned that this message of the strength of our revenue visibility, which really underpins our business model, might be being overlooked. And as you can see, you know, we're in very strong position for the outturn of 20. We have almost 90% of our business already contracted. We have 55% either contracted or near contracted for 21, and already 37% for 22. We've got a very full business development pipeline. I've talked before about the size of that. It currently stands at 358 million in opportunities. And we factor that down to what we consider to be more immediately addressable, a figure of 93 million. For us, the outturn for this year isn't about looking at visibility of where the new work's coming from. We know what the opportunities are. It's now about selecting the best opportunities, which will, again, help to support our future years and, very importantly, provide interesting projects to attract some of the best people in the business. I think having the level of visibility of contracted or near-contracted revenue we have already for 21 and 22, you know, really reinforces our positive outlook for the group and our performance potential as a whole. And surely, you know, what we've got must be viewed as an enviable position by any business in our industry. A little bit about the COVID update. Obviously, this slide made an entry during our May results, and we're still living in the middle of a pandemic, rather strangely. This pandemic is a pandemic that we at Sumo have managed around very well. You know, we're very pleased and proud of how our business and our people have reacted to events outside of our control, and we continue to operate very effectively, and our people's performance is a real reflection of both the commitment and culture of trust we have within our organization. We continue to operate remotely from all 11 studios. We do have 3 studio locations open for a handful of people due to their individual circumstances, but we are working very effectively. Business development is a key highlight, as I've mentioned on the previous slide. We have been hindered to some extent in contract negotiations, and as you can see, when we moved the number of projects and clients up from when we discussed this in May to where we are now, there's been a huge amount of new contracts to secure during that period. If we've seen any slowdown, it has been in contract negotiation and execution, But again, we expect that to improve as our clients also settle in to new working practices. So we don't see this as an ongoing issue. And then finally, we don't have any plans to imminently return to the office in any meaningful way. Now, we'll work around the pandemic, and until there's some stability and on the pandemic's effect, we'll remain as a working from home business. Moving forward to the impact of COVID, I wanted to ensure that we gave an update on the slide that we shared in May. And we continue to execute production very effectively. Since going into lockdown, we've now delivered 78 milestones on time. We've shipped games. Our productivity measures suggest that we are working very effectively from home, just as effectively, in fact, as we do from the office. And the three lines that we have on this graph are projects in different phases of development. And as you can see, there's a lot of underlying stability within the projects that we're working on. Team A, the light blue line, is gelling particularly well. You can see that there's generally an upward trend in the productivity of that team, which again is really pleasing to see as we adopt to this new working practice of working from home. Project B, which is the dark blue line. Now, this is the project, if you remember, I talked about last time, in an early phase of development. There are a couple of peaks within here in terms of productivity. It's generally when we're doing prototype work and disprove expected outcomes. But underlying this, you can see that there's a positive trend of improving productivity. And Project C, which is the amber or gold line. Now, this is a project much later in development. It's a larger project. We are starting to move people off task work onto bug fixing. It is tracked slightly differently at that point in time. But if there's any challenge within our business, it is about closing out projects when everybody's working remotely. There is some degree of impact of working remotely. However, although I say it's more difficult to finish projects, we have successfully shipped several projects already during lockdown. But it's just to give you an indication of how closely we measure the impact of productivity as we move through. Moving on to the six potential misconceptions of Sumo. And we really wanted to draw this out and bring some attention to some of the misconceptions we have around Sumo. First of all, that we're merely a work-for-hire business. We're much more than that. We provide a lot higher value in what we provide. We have our own underlying technology and games engine and tools. We've got our own game IP. We do a lot of turnkey projects for our clients, designing and developing games from the ground up through the full development life cycle and on multi-year contracts. And even on co-development, we are generally providing a solution and not just capacity in the term in the sense of bodies. IP, do we have any conflict? Well, first of all, let's reiterate, we have both our tech and game IP. Our clients don't see any conflict with this. I think that's really borne out by the fact that we continue to do more work with our existing clients and our client base is growing. It's obviously not seen as a challenge or an issue. And in fact, with IP for our clients, we do take on the spiritual ownership of games for our partners as well. Again, essentially owning every aspect of that game from delivery right the way through to bringing the game to market. VGTR, something else that often gets raised with us. This has proven to be very effective. It's in place until at least the end of 2023. It's been a great government success. It has full cross-party support. So, I don't think VGTR should really be a consideration in anybody's thought process. Client concentration, as you'll have recognized on the slide I talked about earlier, we are improving this all the time. We now have 34 projects with 20 different clients. We're very different to when we came to market almost 3 years ago in December 17. We've never viewed this as an issue. We've always been happy to service the needs of our blue chip clients. And that is really, you know, fundamentally what we do. We grow our supply within our existing client base, but look for opportunities at the right time to onboard new clients. But as we get bigger, you know, it will naturally improve, and we are already seeing more projects with more clients. Utilization, our group utilization year to date is running at 92%. In the UK, we're still running at 95% for H1. We've always said that if we were going to be running any lower utilization, it would be in India. And our general target in India is around 80%, which obviously helps as our cost base in India is lower than it is in the UK. But most importantly, these numbers are normal. We've been talking about these numbers now since we came to market. We're very happy and confident that this will continue to be the same as historic levels. And we don't see any reason for that changing. So utilization to us, I think, you know, over the last 3 years, we've proved that it is a normal, sustainable level. And then margins. We're not seeing any margin pressure at all within the current environment, and especially with the client base that we work with. Our main partners are looking for two things. First of all, quality targets of the games that we produce. Secondly, reliability of delivery. This is not about them saving a couple of percent and risking the quality or delivery of a title. And we are absolutely renowned for being reliable partners providing great quality. With that, I'm going to hand you back to David, who can talk you through some of the financial highlights.
It's interesting that the slide that Carl's just run through and the long-term contracted revenue slide were both slides that we were keen to put in following feedback from previous analyst meetings. And we are really keen as we develop our maturity as a PLC that we are seen to under-promise and over-deliver. But also we're very keen to get our message across. So if I come on to the numbers, the key thing about the numbers before I go into any level of detail, they are exactly where we expected and wanted them to be. So we're very happy with the numbers. I'll run through some of the information on this slide. Some of it has more detailed support coming up. So revenue, I'll talk about in a bit more detail shortly. The point I'd make here is that we've grown by more than 25%, and that is virtually all organic, which is, you know, we think is a great achievement. The adjusted gross margin, I'll talk about shortly when we come on to the next slide. Utilization, as Carl says, there are misconceptions about our utilization. 92.1% is pretty much where we expected to be. And if you look at the earlier slide showing the seven games that we've launched or announced in the first part of the year, the way our games work, as we've always said, there's a bell curve of resourcing in a project. So when you come to the end of a project or you're at the start of a project, you have smaller teams, and they also tend to be more senior people. So we've transitioned off from the teams running those seven projects into seven new projects or thereabouts. And we expected at the outset for our utilization to be down from where it was last year. If you drill into that 92%, the Sumo UK number is 95%. And if you remember, we budget 93 and aim for 95. India was running just under 80%, again, in line with what Carl was saying. And Atom Hawk was running at around 90%. Now, with Atom Hawk, we did flag in April because of the short-term nature of some of its projects that we were expecting some slippage through COVID, and that is coming to pass, although there are signs that slippage is now beginning to reverse. Adjusted EBITDA, 6 million, up from 5.2 last year. Cash flow positive. Net cash, this slide has been somewhat overtaken by events. We had 15 million at the end of June. We had £30 million yesterday following raising 13 million in a placing in July. We've now spent pretty much that 30 million. So we're now expecting net debt or net cash or net debt of roughly zero at the end of the year. Contracted and near contracted dev fees, just under 89%. It's a very high percentage for this year, down from last year, which was unusually high. We have easily the opportunity to sign up the 11% we need to very soon. But what we are doing is we are biding our time to make sure we sign up the right contract, because it's not just about the revenue we generate this year, it's also about the revenue that we commit to next year. Talk about revenue and gross profit. The number of points to pick out from this. I've talked about the profile of dev fees in relation to projects, so that the key metric of dev fee per head reflects that phasing. Within this, a number of points to pick out. Own IP royalty, 1.1 million, which is the first significant royalty stream we've generated on our own games. We're not always going to comment on specifics, but you can speculate as to which games might have been generating that royalty revenue. Game revenues has reduced and is running at a fairly low level. We are moving away from doing small games. Now, that's our present position. We may, when the head of publishing joins and formulates the strategy, we may revisit that. But our core business is making bigger games. And as part of that, we've taken the decision not to proceed with Snake Pass 2, the successor to the very successful Snake Pass. And that has incurred a cost to us of 900,000. The gated process worked. It stopped us before we got too far down the line. Clearly, it would have been nice to have stopped it earlier. But as it is, we've redeployed those people onto other more interesting projects going forward. Gross margin, the adjusted gross margin excluding royalties, 40.6%. Is that an indication of a problem in our margins? Absolutely not. The underlying gross margin excluding royalties, we think, is just under 48%. There are three reasons why the delta from the 40.6 to the 47.7. We're doing a large project for a new client, which we've started work on during the first half of the year. We've done a reasonably significant amount of work on that project. We haven't signed the contract yet. In fact, there's a call going on this morning to finalize that contract. We could sign it, but we are choosing not to, because with a new client, we want to make sure we're starting a new project with a sensible precedent for future projects going forward. We have no concern about that project, and that will bring a significant chunk of revenue in. I've talked about Snake 2. The other thing is, like a large number of businesses, I suspect, we have a significant holiday pay accrual at the end of June. We didn't oblige people to take holidays in the first part of lockdown. We are now encouraging people to do that, and we are seeing that unwind, but we are doing so with a relatively light touch. The other thing you'll see from this schedule is that the own IP element of total revenue is around 18%. Down from the 33% that we generated in the full year last year. Now, we were very clear in April when we first adopted this disclosure that the mix between own IP and client IP would ebb and flow depending on the mix of projects and where those projects were. And that's particularly true in a six-month period, which is a very short period in relation to the development of a game. There is no concern about own IP. If anything, the opportunity gets better and better. And there is also no tension between own IP and client IP. I mentioned that we put some of these slides in response to direct feedback. This is an old favourite, which came about when we were in the middle of the IO contract, which we imagined to be called Contract 1. As you can see, that has progressed. This is a left-to-right chronological slide. So June 19, we had 2.3 million outstanding. December 19, 1.3. And June 20, we had 1.6. The good news is that none of those amounts overlap. They're all freshly due amounts. The working capital position remains very clean. There is nothing that is causing me concern, either of an inward nature or an outward nature. And overall net working capital is just under £12 million. We'll go on to the balance sheet. Relatively little to talk about. Cash figure, 15.2 million. I've talked about that rising to around 30 yesterday. What I would say is we've also increased our RCF with the bank from 13 million to 30 million, and that remains undrawn at the moment. So we have plenty of headroom, even though we have now successfully spent the money, the cash that we had. We'll go over the page, the cash flow statement. Not a lot to say around this. Relatively routine movements in the top half. CapEx in the bottom half, significant second half waiting on that, and I'll talk about that on the next slide. £300,000 of acquisition, which was Lab 42, a very neat deal that has been very successful for us. And we borrowed £10 million from the RCF when lockdown started and paid it back on the 30th of June, a purely precautionary measure to boost our cash. If I go over the page, I generally try and give some guidance to the extent I can going forward. The COVID, we've factored into our numbers. You know, clearly we have no overpowering insight into how that's going to work going forward. We are expecting some kind of phased and partial return to some of the studios next year. The principle is while we work from home, we save a lot of travel and entertainment expenses, but we do incur additional IT support and welfare costs. Margins I've talked about, but just to reiterate, we do not see margin pressure, and if anything, we're seeing margin expansion, and that's despite the fact that there's obviously salary inflation in our cost base. Tax, we continue to benefit from a very low tax charge. I would like to get to a clearer point in forecasting tax going forward. It is very challenging, and in our adjusted EPS, we certainly assume a pro forma full charge, which is a simplifying assumption and generally represents upside. Working capital, normal levels of movement. There's an inherent tendency in our business because we bill every month and collect on 30 days, and we pay 75% of our costs within the month in the form of salaries. There is an inherent working capital outflow as we grow the business, but that's at normal levels. CapEx, consistent with what we said in April, $5.5 million this year. Broadly half and half between IT hardware and premises. The IT hardware is standing some very good stead with a robust platform as we work from home. Premises, that despite the fact we're not actually occupying the premises, we are spending money on them. The two Newcastle studios and the Brighton studio leases expired. We've taken on new spaces and we do expect to get back to those. We are spending a relatively modest amount per studio around the estate, which prior to acquiring Pipeworks was 11 studios. Next year, we're expecting a similar amount on IT, but less on premises. And as is customary, we flagged that there's second half waiting this year. Market consensus for this year, EBITDA, which we're happy with at 14, just over 14. We've done 6 in the first half, so clearly we're expecting to do around 8 and a bit in the second half. We have suggested to the analyst community that we're pretty positive about next year, and we're not averse to an uptick in the consensus for last year, for next year, which was previously around 18.4. Going over to my last page, which is an evolution of a page that we started a few years ago. Client and project concentration, Carl alluded to this earlier on. The top three clients in the first half of 20, which obviously is only a six-month period, 10 projects representing 57% of our revenue. I think the most interesting stat, or one of the most interesting stats, is the number of projects that we're doing for the number of clients. Yeah, that is increasing significantly. And if you think, we talked about the number we were doing before, 34 projects with 20 clients, up from 21 projects with 12 clients in April. So there is a natural tendency towards spreading the client base, and that will clearly be helped with Pipeworks. But this is not an overriding objective of ours, because we are always going to do a small number of large projects. With that, I will pass back to Carl.
So moving on to our next slide, another old faithful regarding our live projects. I've talked about the growing number of projects, and what's more pleasing is that we've got more to share in the number of announced games and projects than we did at our last presentation. It's still limited in what we can share due to clients and project confidentiality. What I really like about this slide is just look how busy our studios are. Now, we've got a great depth of clients and projects and an enviable mix of games that we're working on. And that, it's great to see all of our studios so active. Our business development is extremely active, as I've mentioned already. Our challenge really is accelerating our headcount growth within each one of those studios. And all of our studios are focused on that. It is one of the challenges. And as we look at the next slide, which talks about people, talent acquisition is obviously more challenging during a pandemic. I think everybody appreciates that. However, we have managed to still grow in the period by 66 people, which I consider to be a success, although we would have liked to grow quicker. You know, we had aspirations of growing quicker. That has been curtailed due to the pandemic. We're confident that as the recruitment space gets back to some normality, and we are seeing signs of increased activity, that we'll be able to leverage both the announcement of the Great Game projects that we've got, which certainly helps to attract talent, but also leverage some of the new flexible working practices that we've developed because of the pandemic to make Sumo even more attractive and help us to grow even faster in the coming period. Our attrition rates remain very low, which is also very reassuring, although that could also be possibly directly related to the fact that we've been in a pandemic. Very importantly is our use of contractors. And I talked about this during our last presentation in May. And we are seeing increased opportunities to increase the size of our contractor use significantly. And that's another area that we are heavily focused on. So we do have ways to mitigate some of the talent challenges that we're facing. ESG made an appearance for the first time during our last presentation. It is important to us. It's not just a fad. And the reason it's important is because this fits with our culture of transparency and support very well. ESG is something that Sumo has always done and just not labelled. You know, our commitment to our people, investors and clients has always been very important. So we're committed to implementing a recognised framework. We are currently looking at B Corp, and we believe it will be B Corp that we implement. And ESG is going to be a key area of focus for us to ensure we have that alignment with both our own people, our investors, and our client interests going forward. And we want to be very clear about how that all aligns. It's been receiving a lot of internal attention anyway, and we're determined to prioritise this in 21. So moving on to Sumo Digital Academy, which really supports the previous two slides. So talent acquisition, as we've always said, is one of the biggest challenges we've got in our business, and I think is recognised by a lot of our industry partners as well. And ESG is, you know, how do we commit ourselves to our people and ensure security of talent and growth of opportunities? Well, Sumo Digital Academy really looks to achieve that. And I'm extremely proud that we've launched this, because it really demonstrates our commitment to supporting and developing and nurturing talent from the ground up. We will be utilising our apprentice levy to help support this. We've worked alongside other industry partners to establish a recognised framework for the apprenticeship scheme. But very uniquely, we've launched our own academy to support this. We really consider this to be a big statement about our intent to solve some of the skills gap, and we're leading the way. Moving on to the market, and I guess there'll be no surprises for anybody on this slide. The new console launches from Microsoft and Sony, it's always a very exciting time when these things are coming up. And I, for one, still get butterflies about what's going to happen as launches become imminent. Both are receiving huge analyst support, with a general consensus suggesting that this will be the most successful console launch ever. And that would be impressive in normal times, but in the middle of a pandemic, I think, when people are thinking like that, you can really see the strength of our industry and engagement we have with players across the world. In addition to that, more recently, Amazon has announced the launch of Luna. It's not gone live yet. It looks like they're going to be doing a closed beta testing it in the US before going live, but great to see them finally come into the market. And Google are still pushing Stadia, and it's getting some traction. So, a great market, lots of new opportunities, We've got six of the world's largest tech businesses actively supporting our market. As I've said before, it's a very enviable industry, and we all enjoy being part of it, and it's exciting to see what the future could bring. In terms of digital distribution, I think this is obviously accelerating right now, and gamers have really got used to downloading games rather than wanting physical media, and generally people are, it would seem, buying more games and enjoying playing more games. And Sumo remains really well placed to benefit from the increasing demand for high quality creative game development and services. You know, at the end of the day, we're in a growing market where talent and supply seems to be the constraint. And then finally from me, moving on to our strategy in the next 12 months, and for the keen eyes amongst you, you will notice that our strategy's not changed, but we wanted to update on where we are. Now, we believe we made some great progress in the development and evolution of Sumo as a group over the last 3 years. Now, working towards our strategic objectives, we are well positioned now, we believe, to push on even faster and stronger in the coming years. Now, we expect to deliver results for financial 20 that are at least in line with consensus of market expectations. And the strength of our underlying market and the quality and depth of our business development pipeline makes us particularly positive about the outlook for 21 and beyond, as we see opportunities for strong growth in the business. I was asked a question of the last presentation about COVID and the impact. You know, we've not seen the back of COVID, but in video games, is there life after COVID? You've got to say that there is. And as an industry as a whole, you know, we performed extremely well in very unusual circumstances. And that is it from me.
We've got a question from James Lockyer. In fact, it's a double question. Thanks, Carl and David. Firstly, on Pipeworks, can you give us a bit more colour around things like its underlying utilisation rate, i.e. not COVID impacted, and whether it also has royalty arrangements too? And he goes on to ask, then on the deferred consideration, as you mentioned, 10 times full year 21 EBITDA on $100 million EV, that implies around 10 million EBITDA versus 4.2 million in the LTM June 2020. Is that about right? How should we think about the range?
I'll let David take the financial questions. But in terms of utilization, Pipeworks do have a very similar way of measuring utilization to Sumo. As we shared ownership once upon a time, in fact, Pipeworks systems are very similar to the legacy systems of Sumo, and they measure utilization in the same way. And on a like-for-like basis, they are achieving very similar utilization levels.
The question, James, about the multiple, what I said is if you pay the maximum consideration of 100 million, it's broadly 10 times 21 EBITDA, so you're right. The upfront consideration, similar metrics apply. So the 59 and a half we're paying upfront is broadly $6 million of EBITDA in 21. Now, the key thing to think about there is that there are some variations, as I mentioned, in terms of the what we've called synergies, but they're clearly increased costs between their version of the model and ours. So it is broadly thereabouts. And what I'm expecting to do is guide analysts going forward towards the bottom end of the range on the basis that any outperformance from that is clearly good news and accretive beyond that. But it's a good deal at the bottom of the earnout and a very good deal at the top of the earnout.
And James also asks, can you remind us of the gross margin potential on royalties and how that might differ for your own IP royalties?
In terms of our own royalties, we are now generating significant royalties on our own games. Now, the subtle variation in that is that we do incur some cost in generating those royalties in terms of promoting the sales of the games on which we generate the royalties. If you're reading across to Pipeworks, clearly there are potential royalty streams on games there as there are on any other game. It's a global market and the same rules apply. Prominence Poker, which is the game that they've just brought back in-house, has royalty potential going forward. And you know, obviously we'll look at that once we have control of the business. So there's royalty opportunity there, and I think the principles will be very similar to the principles in the existing Sumo Group.
Thank you. And now we have a question from Katie Cousins from Shore Cap.
Morning. Just thinking about next-gen gaming prices as they're pushing up towards £60 and £70, and obviously the games obviously get more complex. Does that give Sumo greater pricing power? Or does the structure of pricing between you and your clients change? And then I've got a second one, I'll ask after that. That's right.
Okay. I'm not sure it directly gives us pricing power, Katie. It would be nice to think that they would share any uplift in gross sales with us. But I think that if you consider that a game now is £60 to £70, it's roughly 30% more than it was 15 years ago. The games themselves are so much more complex and the budgets are so much bigger that I think that the new prices really reflect the effort that it takes to bring a game to market rather than maximising a return.
On your own IPs going forward, should we expect more exclusive deals with platform holders?
I wouldn't say expect more. We will always make the best commercial decision on a project-by-project basis. And if platform exclusivity provides us with the best commercial rationale for that, then we would be inclined to do it.
And we'll go to Ross Broadfoot from Investec.
Morning, Carl and David. Congratulations, firstly, on the deal. Really, really pleased to see that. On Pipeworks, how will the division of labour work? Will the Pipeworks business continue to work sort of with its own clients, or could we see some of that work done in the UK and or India?
Pipeworks will continue to operate as an independent business. It's another vertical in the Sumo Group. It doesn't sit under Sumo Digital. It will continue to operate with its own clients. However, we do anticipate some collaboration. It's always very effective when we have collaboration within the group. There's definitely synergies with Pipeworks' potential to utilise some of the resources we have in India. And in fact, Lindsay's visited that studio in the past several times, and it is well aware of the capabilities we have there. So I do see some potential synergies there to allow Pipeworks to push on.
Okay, a couple more if I may. This deal is on the larger side and will take some digesting. But are you still looking at further targets, or is this enough for now?
As we've always said, we have a very active acquisition pipeline. We will be selective around what we do. We're not trying to buy the most, the highest number of businesses we can identify. We're trying to buy the right ones. I wouldn't rule us out doing another acquisition if strategically it makes sense in the near future. But there will be a very clear strategic reason for any acquisitions that we do. Just as Pipeworks gives us that access to some new clients. Now, they're focused really around back end and live ops, which is fantastic, and having their own technology in Cosmo helps with that. But it also gives us that direct foothold in North America. And at the moment, one of the drawbacks of COVID is not being able to travel and having FaceTime. And suddenly we have a mechanism to solve that for our other operations as well.
Great. And then the last one, David, you talked about margin expansion, perhaps rather than margin pressure. Is that better pricing coming through from clients, or is that a tight run chip on your side?
It's probably a mixture of the two. I mean, we've always been a pretty tightly run ship anyway, so there's not a massive change on that. You know, we try and get more efficient all the time, but it's predominantly around pricing and you know, the fact that our publisher clients also tend to have their own dev capacity and are seeing the same sort of salary pressures that we're seeing is very helpful. But also the strength of demand for content means that there's a lot of business out there as shown by our pipeline. So it's probably more towards the pricing side than towards the cost side.
And now we'll go to Bob Lau of Zeus Capital.
Thank you. Just a few from me, quick ones, I think. And just wonder if you could give an idea of the breakdown of revenues in terms of IP, own IP, and development revenue in Pipeworks. And then secondly, just also in terms of the alternative sectors that the company targets, can you give us an idea of whether that's sort of growing at a faster pace? Is that sort of a real emerging market for them than the core business, or is it sort of somewhere within the rest of the group? That's all for now. Thanks.
Okay, I'll let David take the breakdown, and I'll take the alternative sectors, which I'll address first. So the alternative sectors is obviously where Pipeworks have looked to apply their underlying technology in sectors that are looking for video game style tech to deliver alternative services. It's quite an interesting market. It's very hard to know what the size is because it's not a single market. There are different markets mixed within that. It is, I would say, fairly opportunistic, but it does provide some very high quality earnings when it works. However, we've seen, speaking with Lindsay, we've seen that Pipeworks doing more and more dedicated video game development work rather than alternative sectors. The alternative sectors weren't a key reason for us doing this deal, but it obviously starts to give us access into applying game technology in other sectors and looking to see if that could be an interesting area of growth going forward.
Am I right remembering that it's 20% of the revenues that's exposed to the alternative sectors?
Yeah, we talk about 77.6% of revenue from video games, US public sectors 15.5%, and then the balance of 6.9% from other commercial and enterprise customers. Your question about categories of IP and revenue, my life is kind of blighted by a constant increasing complexity of how we classify our revenues. So Pipeworks, if you think the simple world of Sumo, we used to have client IP and then we introduced own IP. Pipeworks has now introduced another concept called original IP. It's no wonder I'm looking stressed. So the best way to describe it going forward, the projections for Pipeworks on which we've made the acquisition, the very large majority of their revenues on dev fees and the royalty revenues are relatively modest. Now, what we're clearly keen to do is maximize those. And once we get into the business, we'll look at the opportunities. Prominence Poker is an interesting opportunity, but they've only just got the game back. So what we do with that is as yet not fully determined. Within the dev fees, quite a lot of the dev fees come from original IP, which is where Pipeworks come up with a concept, but they then sell it. So it no longer becomes own IP because it's been sold. So, one of the things we're keen to do is look at how that business works going forward. It's clearly very successful, and I'm not suggesting we'll necessarily change it, but it's all part of the continued evolution of the Sumo business. So there isn't a directly comparable split between client IP and own IP in their numbers. Most of their revenue comes from third parties who've either commissioned work or have acquired original IP.
We'll go to Ken Rumpf at Jefferies.
A couple of questions. One was the live ops aspect of Pipeworks that I think is very interesting. Does this mean that the business, whether strictly contractually or in terms of kind of customers who are likely to stick around if you do a good job, is kind of a more recurrent business? You get the question. Second one is on M&A. You know, you've increased the size of the RCF. the other deals that you've done, whether it was a Chinese Room or Lab 42 or Red Kite, you know, have tended to be relatively small amounts of money. I presume that if you, whilst you might, for sort of vendor reasons, want to have a mix of cash and stock, you know, to do a deal that's costing kind of hundreds of thousands or low millions, you'd be comfortable with borrowing that if that was the right thing to do.
Yeah, well, I can certainly look at the M&A side there. Well, I'll look at live ops first, Ken, actually, as it was the first question. So yes, is the answer. In terms of recurring revenue, they have some very strong revenue streams there. Obviously, they support games which are very successful, and they provide a service in ensuring the continued success post-launch. They've got a very good way of demonstrating their capability through their own technology, utilizing Cosmo, which is how they've managed to secure work in the past. And equally, we have that technology to be able to apply to our own games going forward as well. So it's quite a unique opportunity in terms of what they bring. In terms of M&A, we'll just make the right acquisition strategically for our business. And you're absolutely right. The smaller deals that we've done today have really been bolt-on accelerators for Sumo Digital Limited. They've been very important. It's also been important to us that we do give those owner managers equity as part of that process, because you know we are very keen to see alignment and people standing shoulder to shoulder as we push forward with the growth of our business, and it works really effectively. Could we use cash? We absolutely could if we wanted to for smaller deals, and there may be a point in time in the future we would do that. But owner-managed businesses, we generally like to incentivize the people within the business to be aligned with everybody else's interests.
Final question on a sort of more broader topic. I feel that a lot of people in the industry who perhaps had hesitated to work with external providers or co-develop, now having had the experience, perhaps from a belief that, you know, if it's not done within our four walls, you know, it won't work, obviously are now having the experience of their own staff aren't inside those four walls anymore. They're all working from home and likely to do so for a while. Do you feel that kind of breaks down some barriers for people who've not done so much of that kind of activity before? I mean, to me, it potentially increases the pace of penetration of that, the market that you're addressing.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that. We're currently doing an evaluation of the business development pipeline, which we've seen accelerate very quickly over the last 2.5 months. And we're certainly seeing opportunities with new clients that we've not seen before. Now, whether that's just because they found out they've got so much work they can't do it, or whether they've suddenly become open to the fact that there is an alternative way. But also, I think we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that as an industry, organisations are developing their own practices as well. And sooner or later, everybody comes into line with what the norm is. And the norm is to obviously provide or procure services externally to ensure you can support a growing market, especially when acquiring talent is so difficult. So I think you're right. I think people are really looking at this as an opportunity, and maybe COVID has accelerated that thinking of and more importantly the trust that it could work.
And Kevin Ashton from N+1 Singer asks, on cloud gaming, do you get involved in the back-end synchronization, bandwidth management, etc., or is that all the territory of Stadia, xCloud, Luna, etc.? Is there a skill set to be developed or bought here, or is it pretty much proprietary to them?
It's pretty much what we have capabilities for already. We've been working in cloud gaming for a number of years, even before it became popular. We do work closely, and it depends on who's managing the back-end service with regard to how much work we do or don't do. But in terms of skills and capability, we do have that within the group. But what we, again, particularly like about Pipeworks is they've been working on back-end services and that includes the cloud for a number of years.
And Ben May from Berenberg says, firstly, will you report Pipework separately in terms of revenue and EBITDA, given it'll operate on a standalone basis? And secondly, what sort of revenue visibility does Pipeworks have?
Interesting question on the reporting. I mean, I think we will give visibility to its numbers going forward. So yes is the answer to that. We did quote a visibility figure in the document. I'm just trying to find where it is. So in the RNS, we say for the year ending December 2020, contracted games revenue represents 95.1% of forecast revenue. Games revenue is expected to comprise approximately 80% of the acquired group revenue. So that hopefully gives you a flavour for the strong visibility. It, again, it's very similar to Sumo. It has long-term contract visibility. So yeah, the revenue is underpinned. It's interesting, just reflecting on Patrick's earlier question about the numbers going forward. You know, it is underpinned by good visibility. Having said that, you know, if it were to deliver 6 million of EBITDA in 2020, you know, you've got a significant growth in the 4.2 million in the year to June 2020 that we show in the presentation.
Great, thank you. And that's the end of the questions. Carl, do you have any closing remarks?
No, I'd just like to thank everybody for turning up to another video presentation. And thanks for all the questions and positive response to our Pipeworks acquisition.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.